This episode of The Imposter is sponsored by HelloFresh, the meal kit service that makes cooking fun, easy, and convenient. Every week, HelloFresh comes up with new healthy recipes, and they deliver all the things you need to make them in an insulated box to your doorstep. If you want to try it out, you can get 50% off your first box by going to HelloFresh.ca/TheImposter and entering The Imposter at checkout. This is The Imposter, and I'm Aaliyah Pabani. Here's something I didn't know. Canada didn't have an urban contemporary radio station until 2001. And it probably has something to do with the fact that people still use words like urban contemporary when they're talking about hip-hop, R&B, soca, dancehall, basically anything made by Black artists. Back in the late 80s, this Jamaican-Canadian businessman, publisher, and activist named Denham Jolly started the first Black-owned and operated broadcasting company in Canada. It was called Milestone Radio, and they applied to the Canadian Radio, Television, and Telecommunications Commission, or the CRTC, to start a station for hip-hop, reggae, and R&B that would better reflect Canada's Black communities. But the CRTC gave the license to a country music station because, and these are their actual words, it would contribute to programming diversity. It was such a controversial decision that even the CRTC's own chairman said it was a missed opportunity to recognize the right of all cultures to contribute to Canada. Toronto's then mayor, Art Eggleton, wrote a letter saying that broadcast media should mirror the reality of the city and that the decision sent a message to the Black community that they aren't worthy of being seen or heard. Jolly applied again in 1997, but this time, the CRTC gave it to CBC Radio 1 so that they could get better reception on a few blocks in downtown Toronto. It took three tries, but Milestone finally got the station in 2000, and they started Flow 93.5, the country's first hip-hop and R&B station. A bunch of other similar stations went up across the country, but all of them, including Flow, morphed into top 40 radio stations over time because there apparently wasn't enough Canadian hip-hop and R&B to satisfy CanCon requirements. And that means that until the internet could fill the gaps, it was really hard to be a Canadian rapper. It was harder to be a Canadian rapper in Edmonton, and it was even harder to be a Canadian rapper making weird experimental music in Edmonton. But that's what Cadence Weapon was doing. In 2005, Rolly Pemberton, or Cadence Weapon, released a mixtape called Breaking Kayfabe. He was 19. It was this album of kind of raw lyrics over electro beats, and it didn't sound like anything else out there. Calamity days, tragically based on her sister's insanity claims. Apparently, I'm scared to see just where she'll be. It seems she's living too deep vicariously. She's living too deep vicariously. They're living through me vicariously. It made waves on the internet, and it got him a record deal in the US with Anti, this eclectic label that has Nick Cave and Kate Bush and the Weaker Thans on the roster. It introduced people around the world to Canadian underground rap and to references that only people from Edmonton would get, like this bar called the Black Dog, or Bill Smith, who was the mayor of Edmonton for almost a decade, or the fact that their transit system is called Buslink. In the next five or so years, he released two more albums, he started an independent radio show, and he was sworn in as Edmonton's Poet Laureate. I remember finding out about him when he appeared on the cover of the now-dead alt-weekly Montreal Mirror in 2008. He was sitting on the floor, propped up against a shelf of dried pasta and canned tomatoes, and I remember it feeling like a sign that the predominantly white Canadian indie music scene was shifting into this kind of undefinable, genre-bending territory. Cadence Weapon just released his first album in 5 years. It's self-titled, and unlike his earlier albums, he collaborated with his friends who just happened to be very talented producers and musicians, mostly from his time in Montreal. People like Kay Trinada and Blue Hawaii. I wanted to talk to him about how he got here.
My parents used to follow Funkadelic around when they were in college in the States, and like they were like Grateful Dead fans for Funkadelic. You know, so it's like funk has been like just the essence of like my life, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like my uncle's in a funk band, Brett Miles, and, you know, he was the guy who really got me into making music because his band Magilla Funk Conduit. I would show him my raps and he was like really the first person to be like, whoa, that's pretty good. Like, you should come and sit in with my band, you know. So I would like come up with like my little cue cards with like all my lyrics, because actually not my, all my lyrics, I just needed the first line of every rap just to remind me of the whole rap. And I go on and it's like a full like funk band, like saxophones and stuff, and it's like, yeah, okay, this weapon. And I go on and like I rap like during like a jazzy like flute solo and stuff. And that's how I got into making music, really. I'm calling Cadence Weapon.
Pop is contradictory, no mystery, dream of Mars, consider me speeding slowly, screaming for silence, dealing alliance with a team of reasons, dealing in pilots. Yes, I'm dissing, and this isn't just the reason that some allegiance are falling up, claiming I'm the great black hope in this great gray city, it's a great white height, I'm a great white light, a beacon reaching even higher than the sea level, we level up, seeking a life, a reeking a rifle precision, like my life is a rhythm, then walk off the list, I walk off and twist off the twist of a prism, and life is an ism on the real, vice versa, versa, vice, we label by a genre, my personal price of immersion in the right.
I grew up in the internet era, when we first got the internet. And I really took a lot of advantage of that. I was listening to all kinds of music that I wouldn't normally have access to. All this like obscure underground rap. I was meeting all these like weird like producers from like Denmark, getting them to send me beats, and like I'd be on message boards like rapping with people. Like,
wait, that, so how would you find all these? It was early internet, so was it like early internet, Live Journal or what was it?
No, it would be like,
or message boards.
Rapmusic.com.
Okay.
I think one day I entered that in, and there was a message board.
Oh.
And it was like all rap battles. You'd do like text battling.
What?
Yes, yes. You'd like do.
Is that just poems?
Well, it's like written down raps.
Right.
But like, you know, on like a message board. And that was like a thing.
Does that feel like as toothy as it would in real life or no?
It
like,
actually I can did.
Imagine. Really?
No, no. It was like savage. But for me, it was like all about who could be the most clever because it's only on the page. And you have more time to do it and stuff. And like you could really think. Some people get into super epic like conceptual like verses that were like, yeah, reading like really complex poetry or something. That was like a great time. And then it was you would record. You would do like your computer mic. And you'd like get an instrumental from like Kazaa. And then like you'd be rapping. And you'd like send it over to the other person and people would like be like, this person won the battle, this person won the battle.
Was it live? Okay, so conveniently, Cadence Weapon didn't have any of those battle raps anymore, but I was dying to hear one. So here's a real life sample from a website called Lyrical Assault. When I hear you flow, I swear it's like you started rapping. See, this is what you wanted, nigga, so let's get it cracking. I take the track and I kill it, cause this my fucking passion. See, I've been wondering how in the fuck are you a savage. And here's a response from a user named Lord Puente.
Check, game boy. You fucked up, bro. Here I come, motherfucker. Can't be stopped. Nacho. Lyrically can't touch me, you don't fuck with the scripts. But my written's looking like they're written by pharmacists. Ayy. Fatal wound, fatal wound. Ayy. Fatal wound, fatal wound. Hit me
with the fullest energy. Couldn't have said it better. So your newest album is called Cadence Weapon. And I wanted to know when and why people decide to self-title an album.
I mean, obviously, the natural inclination is to do that for your debut album. But I've always thought it was very clutch when like an established artist comes back and is like self-titled like way later. And that I wanted to have that effect. But also for me, it's very symbolic because, you know, I haven't put out an album in like 5 years. And I feel like in so many ways, this particular album really like speaks to me as like being representative of who I am a lot. You know, like I've collaborated with like all these people I know in real life and stuff. And it's like my friendships and like so much of myself is in this record, even more than anything in the past. So I was like, yo, this is Cadence Weapon. This is me, you know?
So you feel like you've kind of gotten to a point where you're like, there was a process of becoming maybe, and you're like, okay, I'm here now.
Yeah, I mean, there was even a brief period where I was going to change my name, too. Before this, between my last couple albums, like, briefly, I was thinking about changing my name to just Rolly. Right? And I, you know, I had like a minor, like, identity crisis.
What made you want to do that?
I just started, like, feeling like I had baggage with the name or something, you know, like, and it related to like some of the people that I used to work with and like the labels that I was on and stuff. And it was just like, I was worried that people got kind of like sick of seeing the name or something. It just felt like this like scarlet letter or something, you know?
Does it have something to do with the idea of like, I mean, your mixtape and your first album came out when you were really young and you were kind of like developing your sound like pretty publicly because of the way that it kind of exploded and got so much coverage and so much attention. I mean, it's not a choice, obviously. Like, if you get that attention, you're not going to be like, it's not ready yet. I'm not quite getting to where I want to be.
No, I mean, yeah, that is a big part of it is that, like, you know, for other people, they get to, you know, have different bands when they were in high school and, like, you know, just fuck around and just, you know, figure out how they want to make music, like, on their own. And, like, nobody really hears it. But, like, for me, it was just, like, all that shit is on Pitchfork, you know? Like, it's, like, so I definitely felt like, oh, God, people are going to associate this with something I made in, like, 2005. Despite the fact that I was, like, you know, 18 when I made it, you know? But, yeah, I have a better feeling about that, my older stuff, today.
Yeah.
Like, I realize there's a certain element of dopeness to my my early work that I think will always be there.
Yo. Yo, it's corrupt where I'm from, Edmonton, tough. The streets can speak about the heads with drugs, rough. City life will leave you red with blood. Punch holes in the walls, then they fed the thugs lunch. After they rocked the party in a literal sense, sedimentary propensity, they hit the kid in the lips. Shit, you could be on White Ave having the time of your life, or then you get your arm broken by a random cab driver as Katie. The nightlife is mad crazy when a drunk tries to steal your car. He was trying to play me, but I didn't let him. We peeled off quick, then we parked at IGA to break the seals off the lid. Don't generalize, you must think and wonder why I drink 40s and memorize bus lit numbers. Well, I don't have a license, but I'm trying to gain prominence because I'm living in a house with a fridge full of condoms.
Like with Breaking Kayfabe, I was like, I want this to be like, you know, I'm the most like fucked up rap anyone's ever heard. You know, like I came up like in Edmonton just like hanging out with like noise bands and like experimental artists and, you know, just like electronic like seven piece bands, and I was like not hanging out with a ton of rappers, you know, and like my ethos was experimental music. That's the way I saw what I was doing. So I feel like that is still a major part of my essence. Like, I feel like one thing that has changed though is that I feel like I am making music for an audience, whereas back then it was just like purely for myself, and it's purely just like me just like fucking around, like making like weird sounds and just like seeing like if I could rap over them, you know, like rapping about the bars I would DJ in. I was rapping about specific like people who are, you know, politicians in Edmonton, public access TV hosts, you know, who are just like scenesters back when you used to use the word scenester. And just creating this world. Cause to me, like, I grew up listening to like all New York rap. My dad is from New York. He's from Brooklyn. And, you know, he was a DJ and he played on CJSR for over 20 years. And he had a show called The Black Experience and Sound.
And that's the case right here with The Black Experience and Sound with your cruise master and general overseer, me. And my name is Teddy. But before I go, as always, in super positive low key,
he introduced rap basically to Edmonton. Like, nobody had ever played it on the radio before. And, I basically had an education in rap growing up from this.
Coloring book and check it, E-Town. It's been a rock down. And always remember this. Peace, love, and Teddy. Hasta I'm in the wind.
I listen to all the rap, all the Golden Age stuff, like I know it like the back of my hand, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I, one thing I really gravitated to was, particularly with like New York music, they would just talk about the neighborhoods they were in, like the street names, like their, you know, their friend who was in jail and got out, and then his niece got shot in the dome piece. Like the specificity of what they're talking about, that really was interesting.
What's
to me.
Dome piece?
Head.
Okay, I was like, it's a Nas. I was like, what?
Who got shot up in Jones Beach? Jerome's niece.
In the dome.
Got
piece.
Shot in the dome piece.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, a big part of rap is like repping where you're from, and
right.
You know, I had to find a way to do that for Edmonton. That was true to the city, but also like true to the genre. I feel like I did that.
You wrote a song about a hockey player.
Yeah. Connor McDavid. Yeah. That was, that's another thing. Like people like a rap song about a hockey player. Like there's no way this could possibly be good.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, I get it. It came very naturally to me, you know, like I saw the excitement with the team when they got the new stadium, they got this like hot new player, and he's like changing the way Edmonton is perceived, and he's also changing the way people feel there. That's what got me so excited. Like I go back home and like I see everybody's got Oiler flags, and they weren't even in the playoffs yet.
Right.
You know, like there was just like really no reason to be that excited, but everybody was like hype, like trucks like ripping by, Oiler flag, you know, like I got intoxicated by the feeling, and I just ended up writing this song. And you know, I wanted it to be the song that guy in the truck would play.
Yeah. I be skating on your whole team, Connor McDavid. Young player, but I'm in the league, Connor McDavid. Anticipated when I came in. We be winning when the game ends. I be skating on your whole team, Connor McDavid. Young player, but I'm in the league, Connor McDavid. Anticipated when I came in. We be winning when the game ends. I feel like Connor McDavid, I'm the wrong one to play with. If a player try to check me, then my goons have to chase him. On the rink, I outrace him. I get respect from the greatest. I got a co-sign from Gretzky. Let's bring it back to the 80s.
I'm wondering about this Connor McDavid song because I was like looking at this article about it. It was on like a sports website.
Yeah.
And they played it for Connor McDavid, and he's like, this is the first time I heard it. It's kind of nice.
Yeah, and he was like, yeah, some of my buddies back home were telling me about it, you know? Yeah, yeah. I was like, that's a classic.
Then I went to the comments, and like, there's this one comment, and I hate to like single out one comment.
Oh,
you never read the comments.
Don't tell me the comments.
You never read the comments. I know, but it's not even that bad. It's just like things you've heard before.
Yeah.
So one of the comments was like, predictably, I just don't get hip-hop.
Right.
It just sounds like talking to music. If I wanted to hear that, I would listen to a podcast. And my first instinct was, wow, like I'm rapping. That's cool. I guess my second thought was just that, you know, here's a song where you're like, you're rapping about like essentially white Canadian culture. And yet there's this like thing about also needing to create a context for the reverse to happen, which is those huge popular audiences, 80% of Canada, like white people who are hockey playing, to like be able to get to your side of things.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's hard for people to be able to recognize, you know, everything in the song they would like, right? But the context in which it's shown is hard for them to engage with,
mm-hmm.
or reconcile with their other previous preconceptions of what they consider rap to be.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It seems like a silly song, but I really put a lot of thought into it. And there's like several different layers to the song, like that maybe people won't obviously notice. Like the song is actually mostly about myself. You know, like I'm talking about, he's like, I was on the road at 19 making fans scream. Like I'm talking about myself. Like,
right.
I feel like Connor McDavid, you know? And it's like, I'm thinking like, wow, like I felt like when I came out with the mixtape and like all that older music, it was like I was having a similar impact on Edmonton and the way it was perceived, you know?
I also like read that you were a bit like critical of mainstream radio play and like CBC not playing enough hip hop or like not really playing stuff that would in some way challenge mainstream listeners. And I wonder like how you feel about that in the moment. Like, do you feel like that's changing or do you feel like it's still not where it could be?
I feel like it's getting a little better. I mean, they just came out with that new station. Let me pull that up. And it's, they were saying it was like because of Daniel Caesar or something. Like,
oh, yeah.
It's like he's like too successful and he's not getting played in Toronto. So they're like, let's start our own, a new radio station. So like somebody's playing him. Yeah. The Move. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's
The Move.
93.5 The Move.
Okay.
Is going back to playing contemporary hip hop, article in Now Magazine. And that was in November they started. And
oh.
they want to capitalize on the popularity of local hip hop and R&B acts such as Daniel Caesar. So, yeah, it was exactly what I was talking about. Like, most recently was the fact that we have all these like artists who are like popping all over the world. Artists from America, like, they act like they're in Toronto like every weekend now. Like, they're like, yeah, it's cold as fuck. I'm here. Like, it's like they're proud. Like,
yeah.
Like, there's one rapper at 24 Hours that like he's always like, talking. He's like, I got a girl in Toronto. Like, he's like, I was there. I mean, it's weird with CBC because there's like this fear of really going out there and like playing like different stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Because they really want to maintain the people who are currently listening, who are like 80 or something, and they're in Saskatoon.
Mm-hmm.
But like they aren't doing enough to appeal to like younger people who like don't know what like the radio is.
Yeah.
You know, and are just like on Spotify, like Rap Caviar playlist, and that's like exclusively where they get all their music.
Yeah.
And like a lot of those tracks are from Toronto. And so like, I'd love to see it become like New York or Atlanta or LA, where they have these like big festivals that are sponsored by the radio stations and all they play is the rap and nobody gets shot. Nothing bad happens. Also, those like marginalized communities get to come together like the same way like people come for like Caravana. There could be like more than an OVO Fest. It doesn't have to just come from like the artists.
Yeah.
It should be coming from the institutions as well.
This episode of The Imposter is brought to you by HelloFresh, the meal kit service that's dedicated to making cooking fun, easy, and convenient. So, like a lot of you, probably, I grew up watching Oprah after school, but the Oprah that I grew up on was the boring era of Oprah. It was after the era where she was making that kind of trashy daytime talk show, like cheating husband type stuff, but before she started giving away cars. And there were a lot of episodes where she talked about her personal chef, this guy, Art Smith. So the major takeaway for me was that when I grew up, even if I don't own a house or have a car, I have to have a personal chef. Fast forward to today. I'm 32 years old, and I don't have a personal chef. And you're probably not going to have one either. But this is the future, and you can at least get yourself a percentage of a personal chef. HelloFresh works with chefs to come up with new healthy recipes every week with step-by-step instructions and the exact portions of produce and sauces and spices that you need to make them. They put all that stuff in this souped-up cardboard box, and that gets delivered to your doorstep. And I know this isn't necessarily how you imagine the experience of a personal chef, but look, these meals take less than 30 minutes to make. It's not really cooking as much as it is assembling a meal. HelloFresh takes care of the annoying parts of cooking, planning the meals, getting the groceries, measuring and chopping the ingredients. The only annoying thing you might have to do is the dishes. But maybe there's a service for that too. Like your kids. This time of the year is the worst time to have to drag yourself out to the grocery store, and if you want to try out HelloFresh instead, you can get 50% off your first week, which can work out to as little as $6 a meal. For 50% off your first box, go to hellofresh.ca/theimposter and enter the imposter at checkout. That's hellofresh.ca/theimposter.
Seven on the upside of eight. We're still in the motion right here with the Black Experience in sound. And let it be known right now, E-Town, the first lady in my life, brought forth the magic and the continuation of T-E-D-D-Y. On the junior side, that's right. If I don't get you, my son will.
I want to talk about your new self-titled album.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So you chose to open it with a clip of your dad. Talk to me about that decision and what it means for the album and for you.
Okay, so the specific sample is from when I was born. It was like right after I was born, and he's on the radio, and he's talking about, you know, the continuation of TEDDY. That's his name. And he has this one line, like, I couldn't fucking believe this when I heard this recording, because I only heard it relatively recently. I was like back in my mom's place a few years ago, and I was like, man, like, I wish we had more recordings of my dad DJing. And she was like, oh yeah, I have a few over here. I was like, were you going to tell me about this? Or so I take them and I get them digitized, and I'm going through the files, like just listening to it. And it's like great, like nostalgic for me. And then I hear him say, you know, talking about me being born. He's like, if I don't get you, my son will. I'm like, oh my God, I got to open an album with that.
Yeah, it's like, it's a really nice piece. It's kind of like really gets you thinking about like legacy in some way, continuing your dad's work.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And that's like a really important thing to me, because I feel like he's kind of an unheralded figure in Canadian music. Like, definitely if you made music, rap music specifically in Alberta, like you knew who he was. He won posthumously a Stylist DJ like Hall of Fame Award, you know, and he's just like such a like larger than life figure, you know? Like, he was just like, every room he went in, he was just like the coolest guy. It was just crazy. It was a lot of pressure for me as a kid, because it was like, he'd roll up to our school and he'd be wearing like a promotional DMX t-shirt. And every kid like wanted him to be their dad.
Oh, you had a cool dad.
Yeah, yeah. Like, kids would be my friend, but they really actually wanted to hang out with my dad and be like around my dad.
You wrote a lot of songs.
I did.
In the past little while. And I'm wondering what the process is of taking a lot of songs that come from a variety of influences. Mm-hmm. You listed kind of Joni Mitchell and Harry Nilsson. And how do you kind of bring it into a cohesive whole? Like, how did you decide to do that?
I mean, like, a lot of those influences, the way they influenced me is very important. It's like, I like something about the character of a Harry Nilsson song, and I'm like, okay, I want it to feel like that song or something. Or like, yeah, you know, the Joni Mitchell song is like, there's one line in it that makes me feel like a certain way. It's like, I would love to like write a line that makes people feel that way. Like, there's a song, Infinity Pool, and I really like the lyrics in that song. Mm-hmm. And it's about, I was officiating a wedding. I became an ordained minister to marry a couple of my friends in LA, and their wedding was in Topanga Canyon. And it was just an incredible view. And obviously, you know, I had to do it for the gram. So I start doing it, and I'm like kind of spinning around, you know, like get the whole view. And I start sliding down the cliff with my phone. And I had to grab onto a rock to stop from falling like really far.
Yeah.
And I couldn't help but laugh at the absurdity of, you know, it would be so embarrassing to die that way.
Right.
Right. That song is kind of about the reliance on technology and things like that. But I'm trying to talk about a few different things in one song in a way that like makes sense. And it's like a lot of my songwriting heroes do the same thing. So I like kind of model the songwriting, even though it's a rap song and it with like kind of like club music. I'm really drawing a lot of influence from these like 60s and 70s singer-songwriters and how they put together songs.
I said, nice to know you, no crossing the border, she's sweeter than cinnamon, girl. Been in Topanga, I hosted a wedding, I fell off a cliff taking selfies. Nearly fell down some stories for my story, recorded some shit that ain't important. All of these flights are remaining in orbit, and all of the prices stay exorbitant. Returning for tour, I'm treating this shit like it's war. Settling scores, rental van look like a tank. I'm out here going for broke, used to be poor. Now I spend cash on couture, happily breaking the bank. Jack at Azure, cop that thing back at the store. Don't know what this shit is for.
In the past, what I would do is I would make 12 songs and I was like, this is the album. But now it was like a lot of outside producers. So I'd have other people sending me beats. I'd meet up with people. We'd jam out. We'd make a track together. I tried to just flip up the process like every time and just to get different results.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up making like almost like 100 songs over the span of 5 years.
Yeah. All to the beat, the 1-2 run through like I didn't want to hear 3 go. All for my people working in the back, waiting for the bus to the depot.
Sipping on vino, Pino Grigio, staying low key, that's a we roll. Tougher than Debo on the block, hotter than Beach Puerto Rico. One life to live like Sibo.
You talk about Pino Grigio?
Yes.
One of my favorite Blood Orange lyrics has Pino Grigio in it as well.
It's chill.
And to me, it's like so funny to hear it rapped. Like I find it, so I think it's like High Street or something, the song where he goes, if you're feeling me, put your Pino Grigio high. This one's for my G's on the north side.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I just love that juxtaposition of Pino Grigio with like my G's on the north side.
Yeah, I think this song, yeah, my song has a similar feeling too, where it's like, I mean, yeah, I love that verse. It's one of my favorite verses. I opened the album with the verse, so I must like it.
Yeah.
But it's like this idea of like, you know, I talk about how I like do it for all the people working in the back, waiting for the bus at the depot. That's like the West Edmonton Mall bus depot. Like after work, everyone's done at the mall, like put this track on, you know? And then it's like sipping on vino, Pino Grigio, staying low key. That's what we roll, you know? Like, yeah, you know, Pino Grigio, it's a chill drink. And that's a theme on this album, actually, is drinking in moderation. Growing up as a touring musician, like, I'm just like, and, you know, just also growing up in Edmonton, just drinking tons of beer. And for me, it's like a tacit refusal of the culture of rap, you know, how everything is so self-destructive, you know? And it's like about like doing like 20 Xanax and, you know, all the cough syrup and like doing all that shit. It's like devil may care attitude. And like, I'm not like that. I like do not want to die.
Every time we drop, you know we do it large. Haters in the place better vacate. Making big moves, you in the same space. I was narrating on payday. You was devastated, player hating on me every day.
Why?
I don't really know what they trying to say.
What?
I don't see shit in the same way.
No.
Been this way since grade 8. When I'm getting paid, don't let it come a day late. No, I'm not sentimental. Independent. Living in the present, trying to stay great. No, I'm not calm and gentle. Kinda mental. Swinging off the trees like a primate. Don't really care about the shit you're into. James Baldwin on an instrumental. Speaks straight.
I guess there's a lot of lyrics in Large that I feel like speak to a lot of the themes that you're trying to discuss, or like kind of really give us a sense of like where you're at.
Mm-hmm.
So like one of the things was the lyric where you're like, you used to play Nintendo and now you don't play games unless it pays the rental.
Yeah.
And I just feel like that's a really interesting line because it seems to reference your early album.
Yeah.
Your first album.
Yeah.
Like Breaking Kayfabe a little bit, like the 8-bit sound. And this album is like production wise, maybe much more involved.
Yeah. That was something that ended up getting like becoming a big part of my like identity. Like people were like, yeah, he's like raps over video game music or something. I'm like, that was so like not really what I wanted to represent.
Yeah.
It's not just like literal video games, but it's also just like play games. Like it's all about like being on my biz, being serious and being like committed to like getting shit to the next level. With this album, I wanted to like escalate everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I wanted everything to be like widescreen.
And is there like a way that the politics of your music has changed over time? Because there's this line like James Baldwin on the instrumentals.
Yeah. I definitely, in the time since like my first album, I'm definitely more knowledgeable about black writers and stuff, you know, like beyond like a Langston Hughes or something. Like I definitely wanted to come from a place of like, this is how I see myself in rap, you know, like, cause I have like a song that didn't make the album where I refer to myself as like the rap Ta-Nehisi Coates, you know, that's where I'm coming from. It's like, there's a certain pride to being like a black intellectual that I like. I like referencing that in the music.
Right.
For me, I feel like I'm really lucky that I'm me at this time, because I always felt like I was making like this cutting edge music, like rapping over electronic music when like a lot of people weren't doing that. And now it feels like mainstream music has caught up to me in a lot of ways. That's the way I see it. And I feel like all I have to do is just be myself, and I think it's going to go well.
That was Cadence Weapon, who's got a girl in Toronto and an apartment and healthcare. The songs on this episode were from his first album, Breaking Kayfabe, and his latest self-titled one, Cadence Weapon. You can find it wherever you're getting your music these days. Because honestly, I don't even know anymore. I produce this episode of The Imposter with Angela Shackle, and our theme music is by Nathan Burley. You can follow us on Twitter at Imster, that's I-M-P-S-T-R, You can follow me at Aaliyah Pabani. If you like this show, rate us on Apple Podcasts. We're at 96 ratings, and because life is meaningless without milestones, as soon as we get to 100, I will make myself a dirty gin martini, I will pour it into a coffee-stained office mug, and I will pour it down my throat. Our crowdfunding site is patreon.com/CanadaLand, and if you like The Imposter, tell your people about it.
When your skin feels nourished and glows, you radiate confidence. Osea makes giving your skin a glow up easy with their clean, clinically proven Mega Moisture Duo. This seaweed-powered duo features two of Osea's best sellers, Undaria Algae Body Oil and Undaria Collagen Body Lotion. Glow from the inside out. Get 10% off your first order with code GLOW at OseaMalibu.com. That's OSEAMalibu.com, code GLOW.